I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dabalina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And we have had a lot of fun this year. I've had a lot of fun, at least, covering scientific rivalries. We've talked about Horace Wells and the gas war, and of course, Tesla and Edison and the war of the currents. That was one that was really popular because it was much anticipated and requested beforehand.
It stirred up a little rivalry on our Facebook page.
Even. It did.
Tesla's got a lot of strong support.
He did. Yeah, I was about to say the rivalry's out there, but yeah, Tesla's definitely kind of a favorite these days, I would say. So those episodes and the Mary Anning Princess of Paleontology episode that we did earlier this year got listeners clamoring for a podcast on another scientific war, one about two 19th century paleontologists, Edward Drinker Cope and Othniel Charles Marsh. Now, Cope and Marsh duked it out over America's fossil deposits during a time when the field of paleontology was still pretty new. Their race to find fossils, name the species that they belong to, and publish their findings about all of this came to be known by many names, including the Great Dinosaur Feud, the Dinosaur Rush, and the Bone Wars.
Our title today. And they really made an impact, too. Prior to their work, there were only 9 known species of North American dinosaurs, and these two men's efforts led to the classification of 136 new species. But Cope and Marsh's feud also resulted in a lot more than just the advancement of their field. It was kind of an embarrassment, too. It was a pretty dark time in a lot of ways. It ended up damaging both of their reputations and maybe even hindered scientific progress in some respects.
Yeah, so much so that it's interesting. Their feud has been regarded, quote, as a kind of scientific indiscretion, says James Pennock in an article in American Heritage. So we're going to kind of explore that a little bit.
But in two parts.
Yes, we are in two parts. But to understand why these guys came to be at such odds, we first need to discuss a little bit about their backgrounds and how they came to be in their field in the first place, because they both took very different paths to end up basically in the same competition.
So we'll start with Marsh. He's the elder of the two. Othniel Charles Marsh was born October 29th, 1831, in Lockport, New York. His father was very poor. He was a farmer, and even though Marsh showed a lot of interest in science from a young age, his father only intended him to take over the family farm someday. But fortunately for Marsh, he had a very influential uncle. His mother, who had died when he was only 3 years old, was the sister of the banker philanthropist George Peabody.
A much beloved sister.
Yes.
Luckily.
So, of course, Peabody had one of the largest personal fortunes in the world, according to Pennock's article. And it was a good person to have, especially if Marsh's father was kind of struggling with his work.
So around age 21, Marsh inherited some money from his uncle that had been meant for his mother's dowry, and he used this money to attend prep school at Phillips Academy. And of course, at 21, he was much older than the other kids there.
I mean,
so
you think that Peabody could have advanced him the money for the education
a little further ahead of time? Yeah, you would hope so, but That wasn't the case. That didn't happen. So according to an article by Tom Huntington in American History, his peers at prep school gave him nicknames like Daddy and Captain, which you would think would just be mortifying. But he didn't seem to care, or if he did, he didn't let it stop him. He graduated as valedictorian and then convinced his uncle to pay to send him to Yale College, where he earned an undergraduate degree in 1860. He then went on to earn a master's degree from Yale Sheffield School of Science a couple years later.
And after that, he spent a little bit of time studying in Europe and convinced Uncle Peabody to donate some more money, this time to Yale, for a museum of natural sciences. And it was kind of a hard sell because Peabody preferred Harvard. He would have preferred to have given his money to Harvard. But Marsh did get his way in the end, and he was appointed to run the museum as curator and became a professor of paleontology at Yale. So if your uncle does pony up the money, it's a good,
you're a shoo-in
way
to
get the job.
Yep.
Ultimately, though, he was the first professor of paleontology in North America, according to Huntington's article. So a big step in his career.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, moving on to Cope, unlike Marsh, Edward Drinker Cope came from a wealthy Quaker family, so definitely a bit of a brighter start in life. He was born July 28th, 1840 in Philadelphia, so 9 years after Marsh, and he also showed a really early interest in science. He actually recorded his impressions of the fossils of an extinct marine reptile called Ichthyosaurus, which I think we talked about a little bit in the Marianning episode. He recorded his impressions of this when he was only 6 years old.
So he was like you, Dublina, playing fossil hunter.
Yeah, I think he was probably a little more on top of it than I was. But when he was 18, he also published a scientific paper on salamanders. And another thing that set Cope apart from Marsh, though, is that he didn't get a lot in the way of a formal education, which is kind of surprising considering he was so into science at an early age. He studied for about a year at the University of Pennsylvania, spent some time studying the herpetology collections of the Smithsonian, and he worked as a researcher at the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, but definitely didn't take that sort of traditional academic path that Marsh took.
He did take a little tour through Europe eventually, though, to further his education. To keep Cope from becoming involved in the Civil War, his father sent him abroad to study natural history in 1863. And he ended up for a time at Berlin University in Germany. And coincidentally, Marsh was there at the same time. And the two guys did become acquainted. And even though it seems really unbelievable, later they were actually friendly with each other, and they continued their friendship stateside, you know, after they returned home, even though their lives did take somewhat different paths.
Yeah, Marsh, of course, came back, and he had this nice cush position at Yale to come into, and Cope came back to marry his cousin, Annie Pern, and he became a professor of zoology and botany at Haverford College in Pennsylvania. That position, however, was pretty short-lived. Cope left it in 1867 to go study a big deposit of dinosaur fossils found in New Jersey. So just a little background on the study of dinosaurs up to this point. According to Huntington's article, a British scientist named Richard Owen had coined the term dinosaur in 1841, but he had described them as these, quote, low-slung, lizard-like creatures. Joseph Leidy's study of the first U.S. dinosaur find in Haddonfield, New Jersey in 1858 totally changed this perception. Leidy worked with the bones of a Hadrosaurus and showed that it would have walked erect on two legs instead of on all fours like a lizard, like most people thought. And that first Hadrosaurus, which Leidy helped reconstruct, became the first complete dinosaur skeleton to be displayed for the public, according to PBS.org.
Well, and Leidy had a connection to one of these guys, too, didn't he?
He did. He had been Cope's anatomy professor at the University of Pennsylvania and was also his mentor at the Academy of Natural Sciences, so probably someone that Cope looked up to and learned from.
Yeah, if you're only going to do 1 year at Penn, he met this guy. But ultimately, Ultimately, Cope did go to New Jersey where this fossil quarry was, and he participated in several excavations there. So at this point, as we mentioned, Cope and Marsh were still friendly with each other, enough so that in 1867, Cope even named an amphibian fossil, Petonius marshi, after Marsh. I mean, that's a pretty nice thing to do for your fellow scientist, I would say. He also spent a week or so in 1868 showing Marsh around the fossil quarry in New Jersey where he was working, pointing out his various collection sites, really being open about his work with Marsh, something important to remember later on. That year, too, Marsh wasn't just going to take this gift of a dinosaur name and let it go. He returned the naming compliment, and according to PBS, gave a, quote, new and gigantic serpent from the tertiary of New Jersey the name Mosasaurus copianus. That gesture didn't count for a whole lot in the long run, but still, it's a gesture.
Yeah, so just to give you a little background of why it might not have been as sweet a gesture as it seemed, Cope later found out that Marsh had gone behind his back and made a deal with the New Jersey quarry owner that ensured that all of the fossils that were found there would go directly to Marsh first. So basically cutting Cope out of the loop, cut him out of the process.
So Cope is taking him around this place, showing off what he's working on, giving him the tour.
Yes, Marsh supposedly, I guess, being totally open about it, not assuming that Marsh is going to backstab him. But that's exactly what happens. So Cope was kind of hoodwinked by this. In the same year, in 1868, something else happened in their relationship, in Cope and Marsh's relationship. Cope was in a big hurry to publish his findings on a new species of plesiosaur, the fossilized bones of which had been shipped to him by an army surgeon from Kansas. And this is how they received their fossils sometimes.
This reminded me a little bit of the Mary Anning episode where, of course, the earlier situation we were describing of Cope going to the dig site and looking himself sounds more like what you'd expect, but just having bone shipped to you from somebody else.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the bone collectors and so forth a little more in part two of this, but this sort of introduces that idea. But anyway, Cope, he got these bones. He called this previously unknown plesiosaur Elasmosaurus. Unfortunately, though, when Cope was reconstructing the Elasmosaurus skeleton, he made a pretty major error. He reversed all of the vertebrae and put its head on its tail instead of on the end of its neck.
Pretty bad. And guess who noticed? Marsh paid a visit to the Academy of Natural Sciences to check out Cope's work. And of course, he did not hesitate to point out this error. And he's even said to have been the first person to point it out to Cope. Cope called in Joseph Leidy to take another look and offer up a second opinion. He confirmed the mistake. And actually, upon looking at the skeleton, Leidy removed the head and placed reversed it with what Cope had originally thought was the tail. So pretty bad.
Yeah, and Leidy also discussed this error at the next meeting of the Academy of Natural Sciences. So you can imagine it's just like embarrassment on top of embarrassment. First, he's embarrassed.
His mentor.
Yes, he's embarrassed in front of his colleague. Then he's embarrassed in front of his mentor. And then
at the Academy of Natural Sciences.
In front of this entire meeting of scientists. And, of course, also, it's in publication, as we mentioned before. It's already out there in the Journal of the American Philosophical Society. They had already published his findings, including a drawing of this incorrect restoration. So Cope frantically starts to try to buy back every copy of the publication that he could find. But this incident, combined with Marsh's shady dealings regarding the New Jersey quarry, really seemed to have kicked off the feud between the two, or at least started the rift and bad feelings between them. But if you really look at which of these incidents had more to do with the bad feelings between them, it really depends on which one of them that you asked. I mean, Cope would probably say it had more to do with what happened in New Jersey.
The fossil issue.
Yes, yeah. And Marsh would say that he was just embarrassed and mad that he had pointed out his mistake.
Yeah, well, Marsh even later wrote of the incident and said that it was Cope's, quote, wounded vanity that had received a shock from which it never recovered. And he has since been my bitter enemy. So, yeah, that's Marsh saying, oh, Cope just couldn't handle being wrong, essentially. He also later admitted that while he initially did return his copy of the publication to Cope, as Cope had requested, trying to hoard all these incorrect copies, March later sought out and bought two additional copies, which he did hang on to, as if he wanted to have them as some kind of ammunition. Seems like something that your buddy wouldn't do.
No, only your most bitter enemy would do that, or at least you would hope. But this is a great example of how Cope's big rush to get things published sometimes resulted in him making errors. But of course, Marsh, although he was said to be very meticulous, wasn't immune to this either. He did make his share of mistakes. Just one example, he once put a Camarasaurus skull on the skeleton of an Apatosaurus, which, according to an article by Renee Clary, James Wandersee, and Amy Carpinelli in Science Scope, was, quote, one of the longest-lasting mistakes of paleontology. And we're going to discuss at least one of his other major errors later on, too, but that's just to give you one example.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And so, of course, in some ways, you know, we've been talking about this rush that both of the men were constantly under. These eras were a direct result of competition between them, because not only were they trying to get their discoveries out there quickly, because the naming rights were given to whoever published a find first, they were trying specifically to beat each other to the punch. I mean, that's not going to make great meticulous work in the end, most likely.
Right. The feud between Cope and Marsh really began in earnest in the 1870s when they both headed west to hunt for fossils. Marsh's first expedition was in 1870, and it was sponsored by Yale, and he had this whole entourage with him, including about a dozen Yale students and even an army escort that they acquired once they'd made it to what's now the Midwest. They explored Kansas, Wyoming, and Utah, and according to Huntington's article, at one point they even had Buffalo Bill Cody as their guide. But by the time they got back to Yale after that first trip, they had 36 boxes of specimens, including bone fragments from a pterodactyl wing when no pterodactyl had been discovered before. And Marsh estimated that this giant flying reptile would have had a wingspan of 20 feet. So Cope and Marsh, when they really started to butt heads, was around 1872, when Cope started exploring Wyoming territory looking for fossils there. Huntington writes that Marsh was really angry about this because he considered the area his turf. I guess because he'd already hunted for fossils around there.
A little taste of his own medicine there, I have to say. But this ultimately kicked off a really nasty sort of letter-writing campaign between the two. It reminds me of the pamphlet wars we sometimes discuss on the podcast. But their war tactics were not just limited to words either. They employed everything from espionage to theft in their battle to be known as the best in the field, and I think to a certain extent to make sure the other guy was number two, too, or even lower. Right. So we're going to be discussing examples of some of these tactics in the next episode, as well as what happens when Cope and Marsh finally take their fight to what turned out to be the ultimate battleground for them. And it was not some fossil ground. It was Washington, D.C.
Yeah, so lots of interesting things to cover in part two, including I think we'll talk a little bit more just about their personalities, too, and their personal lives, because I think it gives some interesting insight as to maybe some more of the root of the animosity. It wasn't necessarily all about dinosaur bones.
Not all about it.
No.
But a lot.
A lot, yes, that's for sure. All right, well, before we sign off for today, we do have a couple of pieces of listener mail. One is an email from listener Bill, and I just wanted to read this. It's just a couple sentences, but I wanted to read it because he brings up Indian territory.
Oh, your favorite place.
My favorite place. He says, an old friend used to talk about his dad's birth certificate stating Oklahoma Indian Territory as his birthplace. He was born in a small town just north of the Red River on April 1st, 1906. And in parentheses, he put, no kidding. So that's pretty cool.
I bet you wish you were born there, but you'd have to be a lot older, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't think that would work out.
I was kind of hoping Cope and Marsh would head out Indian Territory way to do some fossil finding, but I guess not quite.
They're in the range.
They are.
They're in the area. But I have another message from a listener, this time a Facebook message, that talks about a place where Cope and Marsh definitely did not do any exploring, at least not that I know of anyway. Colby sent us a note on Facebook and wanted to talk about the Gertrude Bell episode, and he had kind of an interesting point to make that I thought was worth sharing. A critique of the podcast, actually. He said, I love your podcast. As a huge history geek, I think I've listened to almost every one. I know your podcasts aren't meant to be the super definitive statements on subjects, but the Gertrude Bell one bothered me a bit. The end painted a really rosy picture on the formation of Iraq. To be overly PC, it was really a Western and paternalistic view on the whole thing. I can't believe I said something like that, LOL, is what he said in parentheses. The British killed thousands, putting down regional, ethnic, and tribal rebellions at this time in Mesopotamia. They strafed villages and farms from the air and used poison gas, I believe the only Western power to do so after World War I. So, an interesting point to make. I mean, I thought that we did sort of talk about how A.T. Wilson tried to squash down the Arab rebellions in part two of that podcast, but definitely wasn't a big mention, and so it's worth bringing up again. It's a good reminder, I guess, that this wasn't all just happy. The Arabs were glad to go along with having the British rule them for this time. And so thank you, Colby, for writing in. I mean, we definitely can't cover every aspect of every episode as much in depth as we would like to. So,
or the implications of what always happens later in the century. And this is a clear example of you could keep going up until the modern day.
But, oh, so true.
It's always a good reminder from listeners to hear what you wish we talk about next time.
Yeah, and we appreciate that when people write in with critiques and point out things, and especially when they do so in such a nice way.
Throw in an LOL.
Yes,
yeah, that's great.
Cool. So thanks again, Colby. Thanks everyone who writes into us. If you'd like to send us a comment on a podcast or maybe even just an idea suggestion for a future podcast, you can find us at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Facebook and we're on Twitter at Missed in History.
And as you bide your time until this part two of Bone Wars comes out, we do have a lot of paleontology articles, don't we?
We do. And you can find them by searching on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.